следующее время. Ну, вам здоровья. So we try to talk a little bit today about a topic that of course is relevant for Balamat and Tarasenu, and that's some of the things that go into answering shaylos. What exactly are the requirements to answering shaylos? What are some of the impediments to answering shaylos properly? What are the halachas of answering shaylos? So we'll try to speak a little bit about some of these things. So first of all, what are the requirements for a person to be royal kach to pass in a shaylos? The Gemara tells us in the beginning of the Masechta Sanhedrin that there are a whole series of different criteria that are necessary. The first is the most obvious, that in order to answer a question in any area of halacha, whether it's a behetta, whether it's a mumin, it's ishus, whatever the area of halacha is, so the first most basic requirement is the person be knowledgeable. If you don't know the sugyas, you don't know the answers, and don't answer the questions. That, you don't need a Gemara to tell us that. That's a double portion. And then the Gemara tells us something which is sometimes not everybody understands as well. The Gemara says that it's not enough just to be proficient in the halacha, but a person has to understand the mitzvahs as well. The Gemara actually goes out of its way to tell us that Rav, before they gave him the permission to pass in shaylos, before they let him be the answer certain shaylos, so he went and studied the Metzias. The Metzias, a particular area of Metzias that the Gemara is discussing, is the area of Hetta Bechoros. So there's a whole complicated parakim in the Hetta Bechoros about the dinim of Mumim. If you have an at first born animal, so it has Kedusha to it, and you have to bring it as a korban. If you live at a time when there's no Beis HaMikdash, so you have a problem because it has Kedusha, and you can't bring it as a korban. You have to let it run around wild. You have to wait until it gets a mum. So once it gets a mum, then you're permitted to shecht it chutz l'mikdash. This then applies even to Zman Hazeh. We try to circumvent this problem of Zman Hazeh by selling the animals to a guy before the firstborn takes place, before the Kedush B'chor is chal. But the dinim of B'chor still apply for us to Zman Hazeh. So in order to paskin whether an animal has a mum or not, that's a very, very complicated area of halacha. Gemara has two whole problems with Zman B'chor is to give the details. What's considered to be a mumanat? Before Rav felt that he was proficient enough to paskin in this area, not only did he learn the sugyas, but he went to do shimush with the farmers. That's what the Gemara says, that he lived 3 months. He spent 3 months living on a farm in order to learn what animals are. Otherwise, he can learn b'chayrus from day till tomorrow. If you don't know what an animal looks like, if you don't understand the biology of a mum, so then you're not going to be able to paskin properly. So you see from this Gemara, this is only one example. The Gemara was saying that this is true in all areas of halacha, that if you don't understand the mitzvahs, then you're not going to be able to paskin correctly. So you see, there are two things. So you have to be an expert in the halacha, that's a given, and then you have to also understand the mitzvahs. And then the Gemara says, even that's not enough. The Gemara says that in the days of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, they made a special takana that a person shouldn't paskin shaylos unless their Rebbe tested them from beforehand and found that they're qualified to answer the shaylos properly. What exactly was the test supposed to be? So the Gemara says, it wasn't a test to know whether the person knows the halacha. You don't need Rabbi Nosi to be misafir that. The days of Moshe Rabbeinu was understood. You can't pass if you don't understand. You can't pass if you don't know the Metzias. What was the takana of Rabbi Nosi? The Gemara says that even if a person is a big Tamil Chacham, even if a person understands the Metzias, if they don't know how to speak clearly, if they don't know how to express themselves properly, so then they're going to make a mistake. They may be thinking they're passing correctly, but the Olam is going to misunderstand what they're saying. So the Gemara tells a story about there was a certain Talmud passing the Shaila, and he didn't speak clearly. And he said the word beitzim, but he mispronounced the word beitzim, and it came out like betzoyim. So mei betzoyim means muddy water. Mei beitzim means egg yolks. So it's a little bit of a difference. So the Gemara says there was a whole mikshol luchas chala that he got up and he gave a whole drasha how mei beitzim and machshirin, and they thought he said mei betzoyim and machshirin. It was a whole mistake. So when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi heard about that Talmud's error, so he realized that the Talmud may have been the greatest Talmud Chacham in the world. He may have understood the Metzias perfectly, but if the other didn't understand what he was talking about, then he had no right to paskin. So the Gemara says, that he's not supposed to paskin a shaylos until the Rebbe makes sure that he's qualified in all these areas, including the ability to express himself properly, in order to answer shaylos. So these are the three basic criteria that Chazal speak about in the first couple of daf in the Masechta Sanhedrin: proficiency in the halacha, proficiency in the metzias, and being able to express oneself clearly. There are other halachas that govern who is qualified to paskin shaylos. There's a sugya that appears in Sanhedrin also. It appears in Erev and in Ksubis. That's the sugya mar halacha b'fnei rabba. The Gemara discusses the prohibition of paskin shaylos in the presence of one's Rebbe. The whole question, how do you define what's called a Rebbe, what's called a presence? But there is an issa which the Gemara seems to assume is a din min haTorah, of Meir Halacha B'Fnei Rabbah, that we're not supposed to pass the Shabbos in the presence of one's Rebbe. What is that all about? What's the nature of that Isser? So there are really two different ways of understanding this Isser. So one is that it's just a din of Kavod HaRav, and it's not a proper respect for the Rebbe. Not that we think you're going to make a mistake. You're going to pass it if you're proficient, if you're qualified. So even if your Rebbe's standing there, you're going to answer properly, you're going to answer correctly. But it's a bizayon to the Rebbe, to pass it if the Rebbe's standing there. So that's one way of understanding the Yisr. Or there's a second way of understanding the Yisr, that it may be a deficiency in the Psach, that you're going to try to pass the Shah in the presence of your Rebbe, so maybe you're going to make a mistake. Why are you going to make a mistake if I'm qualified? Because in order to pass a Shaila, it's not just enough to know the material, it's not just enough to know the Metzi, it's not just enough to know how to speak, you have to have Siyata Dishmaya. So if a person doesn't have the proper Siyata Dishmaya in Psach Halacha, he's not going to be successful. So perhaps one could argue that if the Rebbe's there and you're not consulting the Rebbe, maybe the Rebbe is going to get that Siyat Deshmaya. He's a greater Talmud Chacham than you. So and you don't consult him, you do it on your own. You get up in your, you get up as this, a very cavalier attitude. I'm going to pass the Shaila, even though my Rebbe's standing right there. So maybe that's going to detract from the authenticity of the Psach. And maybe it will end up that the Psach will end up not being correct. So the Gemara itself, in the Sefer Ksubos, raises both of these possibilities. So Gemara raises the Shaila. What's the nature of this din of Meir Halacha B'Fnei Rabbah? Why is it that you're not supposed to pass the Mishnah in the presence of your Rebbe? Is it just based in Kavod HaRav, or is it more within that? That we're afraid that the Psach actually may not be correct. So the Gemara concludes that both are true. The Gemara says that the Yisr being Meir Halacha B'Fnei Rabbah is not just Mishum of Yizayin of the Rav, but that we're really afraid that if you do it, so you're going to make a mistake. The Gemara tells a story about one of the Amoraim Haskin in the presence of his Rebbe, and he made a big mistake in the Psach. It was a very, very simple Shaila, and he never should have made that mistake. And he said that the reason why he made the mistake is because he was lacking the Siyata Dishmaya. Isaiah Milsa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give him that special intuition to pass him correctly because it was B'makom Rabbah. So you see from the Gemara that it appears to be that there are two reasons. That the Isser of Meir Halacha B'Fnei Rabbah was not just the Bizayin, but it's also that we're afraid the Psach is not going to be correct.
Isn't that also because of Kavod
HaRav? Yeah, it's both, right. The Gemara concludes that it's both. The Gemara says that not only is there an Isser out Mechzik Mechurus, not only is it because of Kavod HaRav, but it's also Globus Diagnosis.
Is the Globus Diagnosis a result of the lack of Kavod HaRav?
That's putting it in. It's not like Zerusha. We'll talk about it in a second. So it would appear from the Gemara that these are two separate reasons. So comes Tosis and says, why not be made between the two reasons? At the end of the day, you're not going to do it. So who cares whether it's just an Isser, a Lechatchil of Bizoyin Arav, or whether it's actually going to impact them on the Psalm to the Evid. So Tosis says, Lechay Chafsin Afkamina, in terms of the Chila. What of the Rebbe's Michael? So the Gemara says in the Sense Kedushin, that Arav Shemachu Kvedi Kvedi Machu, the Rebbe can be Michael on his cover. The general rule in Halach is that whenever something is coming to me, if I'm the Bailam on something, I can be Michael on that cover that's coming to, let's say, a parent. So parent can be Michael on the cover that's coming to them because they're the Bailam on the cover. They deserve the cover. They raise the kid, they're the Megillah the cover. So Av Shemachu Kvedi Kvedi Machu. In contrast to Melech, Melech Shemachu Kvedi Ein Kvedi Machu, the reason being that Melech is not getting covered out himself. He's getting covered out. The Rav Shlomo, he's the Melech of Kol Klal Yisrael. So the Melech is not the Bailam on his covered, so the Melech can't be Michael. So the general rule the Gemara says in Kiddushin is, whenever you're the Bailam on the covered, you have the ability to be Michael on the covered. It's like Mechila on Mamanis. If you owe me money, I can be Michael on the money. If you broke Reuben's window, I can't be Michael on Reuben's window. I can only be Michael on money that's coming to me. So the Gemara is a Shaila in Kiddushin. Can a Rebbe be Michael on his covered? Who's the covered coming to? Is the covered to a Rebbe due to the Rebbe himself as the Gaffer? He's the Bala covered? Or do we say, no, that it's Kavod HaTorah, he's not the Bala Kavod? So the Gemara is Machlokes Amoraim about this. And the Gemara concludes that it goes to the Rebbe. The Kavod goes to the Rebbe, and therefore Rav Shemachal Kvedi Kvedi Machal. So Tosis writes in Ksubis that if the whole reason for the Yisr of Paskin, the Fnei Rabbi, is based on Kavod HaRav, so that the Rebbe can be Michael. The Rebbe says, listen, you answer the question. I'm Michael, so it should be Hetter Gomer. But from the fact that the Gemara adds a second dimension, that Lo Mestayim Hilsa, so it's Lomestai Milsa, that's not an issue of Kavod HaRav, so either the Psach is going to be right, it's going to be wrong. So Tosis says, therefore, Talmud has no right to pass in the presence of a Rebbe, even if the Rebbe is Michael, because it's still going to be a problem of Lomestai Milsa. That's what Tosis writes. So the Rashba and the Tshuva doesn't write. So the Rashba writes that Mechila does work. But the Rav Shemachal Kvaydi will work to be Matir, the Talmud to pass it. So according to the Rashba, how do you Limshan the Gemara? The Gemara says that there's this additional dimension of Lomestai Milsa. So clearly the Rashba is learning that the Lomestai Milsa is not an independent reason. Rather, the Lomestai Milsa is a result of the Yuzalz of the Kavod HaRav. Why am I not going to get the Siyat Dishmaya? Because I'm not acting properly. Because I'm violating the din of Kavod HaRav, therefore the Rosh will not give me that extra dimension of Siyat Dishmaya. But imtum tzilam that I don't violate any answer. If I get mechila and the Rav shemachol kveni kveni mechol, so it's mutter for me to pass. And then I don't be concerned with the lack of siyat mishmai. The siyat mishmai will come. So chabsinaf kaminu ladina. So that question you just asked, they is machlokes Tosfos in the Rashba. So Tosfos is learning the two independent reasons. Mechila will not work, and the Rashba says no, the mechila will work because the lowest endos is only a function of the lack of mechila. There is a big machlokes aboskim. How exactly you define a Rav for these purposes? The Gemara has in Ilam Metzias that there are two different types of Rabban. There's a Rebbe Muvuk and a Rebbe Sheina Muvuk. So a Rebbe Muvuk is usually defined as someone who taught a person Rav Taraso. That's the whole question, whether we even have that Bezman Hazeh. Most people today don't have a real Rebbe Muvuk in the classic sense of the word. Most of us don't learn Rav Taraso from one person. In the olden days, so you learned Tosha Rapet was all the outcast, so you had to learn everything from the Rebbe. As much as everything is written in, everything's on paper, everything's in the books, everything's on computers. You can learn from a lot of different sources. It was the way your Torah all day. So yeah, your Rebbe is the way your Torah, whoever you hear most of the Torah from. So as much as the Poskim Reiter, we don't really have a classic Rabbi move up most of the time. With most of Rav Tarasa, we learn from multiple sources, as much as that. But the Rav used to say that he thought that we could still have a Rabbi move up as much as that. If you have someone who was mamish created you as a Talmud, sometimes a person, he really molds you, he teaches you how to think, he teaches you derech halimud, he mamish everything that you learn for the rest of your life is really attributed to him. So even though it could be that in 50 years from now, he count up all the daf and gemara, but more daf from the gemara itself rather than from my rabbi, but Afa Bichain, he's the one who told me, he guided me, he told me how to think, and therefore he has the status of a rabbi muvuk, even bezman hazeh. So the rabbi used to say about himself that he felt that his father, by salvation, was his rabbi muvuk, even though by the time the rabbi was 75 years old, he had learned, he hadn't seen his father in 40 years. But and he had obviously learned more Torah in the last 40 years than he had the first 20 years. But Afa Bichain, he felt that his father had molded him and taught him how to learn a sugya. So he felt that everything was all due to that leaving of his father. He felt that he still had the status of a Talmud Muvok vis-a-vis his father. Not so much for Nafkaminim, because all the dinim of Rabbi Muvok are pretty much the same as kavod of a parent. There are different gradations of kavod between a Rabbi Muvok and a Rabbi Shimon Muvok. So the Tischei Tshuva points out in your day that a parent is pretty much like a Rebbe Muvuk anyway, in terms of Mora and all those klolim, so it's not that much enough to me, but enough to me here and there. Anyway, get back to the story. So some Rishonim say that the din of the Isra being Mora Lov by Rabbo applies even not to Rebbe Muvuk, even to a regular Rebbe. But Rebbe Shenem Muvuk is an Isra being Mora Lov by Rabbo, and others say that it only applies to Rebbe Muvuk. So it's a combination of these factors that people are very makele about this Bezman Hazeh. That if you look at the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, they give you very, very detailed requirements of what's called Merlach Ferav, it's kind of within 12 milen, you have to be outside of 12 milen, all the Paschal Shailas. The Maisa today, most people, most Rabbanim today, Paschal Shailas. If there's a Rabbi, a person has a Shul Tinek, and his Rabbi lives in Washington Heights. So every time we get to Shailas, they say, I can't answer the Shaila, I have to go call my Rabbi, and you're Merlach Ferav. So most people, most Rabbanim don't really follow this Bezman Hazeh. Why not? So a combination of these factors. Number one, we very, very rarely have Rabbanim who hawk in a classic sense Bezman Hazeh. So that's one mitigating factor. And the second mitigating factor is that usually the Rebbe gives Mechila. How do we know the Rebbe gives Mechila? Well, the Rebbe speaks at your installation. They install you as a rabbi. So usually you invite your Rebbe to come, so your Rebbe says, he's your rabbi. So that's what he's saying. He said, don't call me, call him. The Rav doesn't want to get, the older Rav who lives in Washington, he doesn't want to get bombarded with 5 trillion shots, more than Tabir that he placed in different shuls. So it's understood that there's some degree of Mechila over here as well. So the combination of the Mechila and the fact that we don't have such a Rabban move up with matters. There's some most Rabbanim do pass in shalos, even though they're attacked in the presence of the Rebbe. The Rambam writes, if your mom is standing next to your Rebbe, Rebbe's mom is there, and someone comes to you and says, so proper cover indicates it's supposed to be Rivash. Even if you hold it, it's not the realist of Moralach of the Rabbah, well, you should hand it over to the Rebbe, Paschal the Shiloh. But if it's not practical, so then the Rabban of your Paschal thinks that.
Is every time you tell somebody who asks, you know, this is what the Mishnah Berurah says?
Yeah, we'll do it down in a minute. What exactly is it? What's a Psach altogether? The Pesach Tshuva quotes from some Macharonim that Mizman is the Arabonim of Hokmar are Svarim. Because that's where we get most of the Torah from. So we get most of the Torah from Rashi, from the Rambam, from the Rav Chaim, from Mishnah Berurah, different styles of learning, whatever the sect you're learning. So those are our Rebbeim. So the Pesach Tshuva quotes some Achronim to say that you shouldn't pass the Shah until you look at the Svarim. So it's Tama, a person calls you up in the Shah, wait, you can't check the Svarim, otherwise that's a Bechina of Murah Halacha B'fnei Rabbi. So it's hard. Lechera, that should probably depend. Opinion is Aiti, whether that Chumrah is really holds any significance. Lechora should depend upon what's the nature of the Yisra Bar Lachim Rabbi. If you hold that Barulah Pei Rabbo is basically a Kavanah Rav oriented halacha, and the lack of Siyata Deshmaya that the Gemara speaks about is a result of the lack of Kavanah Rav, so then it's hard to say it's a bizarre to Mishnah Berurah. Someone calls it a shell. So I'm being mevazed the Chofetz Chaim by not looking in the Sefer. And it's hard to matter. It's not bizarre to Mishnah. So if you hold like the Rashba that there is no independent bit of lack of Siyata Deshmaya, it's just that it's Neveya from the Isser of Yizoyin, the Chavim, so the Chumr doesn't really make any sense. But if you hold like Taisos, that they're two different halachas, but there's a din of Kavra Ram, and there's a second din of Mistayim Milsa, that if a person doesn't ask the Rebbe, it means you don't go the extra mile to check out with the experts, so Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to give you that Tziyat Lishmai, so then one can begin to fathom this idea of this Chumrah, that you have a chance to live in the Svarim, and you don't bother living in the Svarim, so you're not going to get that extra Tziyat Lishmai. So even though the Pesach Shiva quotes this, I don't know, I know many Rabbanim, myself included, who are not mafid in this. I think many Rabbanim who have shout outs in the past who don't say, let me go check, see what the Mishnah Berurah says. Let's go learn to the Sugya before we end. The problem is, Bizman is their shout outs fly so fast. It's not like the old days. The old days, so you had a little town in Europe, so how many had 15 Malabas in the whole town? So a person would come and you'd bring a chicken, they'd bring a shayel or something, a shayel would come up. So then asked the Rav. So either the Rav knew on the spot of the answer or not, he looked at the Svar and he gave an answer. If it was a very, very complicated shayel, he would send the chum to Rikveg or something, some Biladar, then the shayel would come back 6 months from now, the chicken was already spoiled. But everyone, that's the way shayel used to be passed in the olden days. So people had to wait, learn patience. As man as that, nothing happens like that. As man as that, every shayel has to be answered. It's like playing video games. Everything's got to be mamushed that split setting. Like, you answer the shah. Someone closed with it. Rabbi Willie once said, he said that Rabbanim today after Paskin Shail is that Chassam Soif used to have the luxury of waiting 6 months to Paskin. He said he would get a Shail and didn't refresh us. Chassam Soif, you have plenty of time. As man as that, Rob gets a call 2 o'clock in the morning from the emergency room to put the sign of the NR, not the sign of the NR. There's no Shail. You can't ask anybody. There's no one to talk to. I mean, you have to either know the answer or find another job. Like, you have to answer Shailas. Mamash in the spur of the moment, this man is that. So it's a different, world. But anyway, whatever it is.
What's so, 2 o'clock in the morning,
to sign whether patient is in the hospital, what's the sign of DNR or not? I do not resuscitate. It could be at 2 o'clock tomorrow, Shabbat. Couple of this guy married, they call you Chazni the Shabbat, and all that. It happens all the time. So you have to sometimes answer, you have to answer Shabbat as quickly, you know, time to sit and look and swarm. So, every time you guys, Rabbanim getting email shadows, getting cell phone shadows, and shadows coming from all ends of the world. So every time to look up in the safe, it's not going to happen that way, as far as that. So we're stopping the meeting of Rabbanim today. It's not like that. Just true. We assume that's not really included in the Yisro Meral of the Rav. It appears to me what the meeting of Elul is today. What exactly is considered to be a psach halacha for these purposes? That you have to even be concerned with the decision in the first place. The post can discuss differences between a very, very simple shaylos and some more complex shaylos. So the Gemara has a comment in Maseches Tubis, in Maseches Ha'irvin, that a person has to be careful not to pass in a shaylos with a rabbo, a filu be'ez of a kuscha. Even a very, 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 very simple question, something as simple, as elementary, as a be'ez of a kuscha. What exactly is a be'ez of a kuscha? It's for a be'ez, so we know what a be'ez is an egg. Kuscha, we learned in the third pack of Pesachim, is some kind of a dish that had milchix in it. Remember the famous kusach from the seventh parak of the Chulin? So it has milchix, has some kind of spool of milk in it. Gemara describes, give you a whole recipe of how to make this kusach. So Gemara says it's partially a spoiled stale bread, partially spoiled milk, and some salt. Those are the three ingredients. Why in the world anyone eat this? Like some kind of a sour cream dip, the most equivalent, some kind of a fancy sour cream dip or something, the kusach habavli in the third parak of Pesachim. So it's got everything going against it. It's got chametz problems, and it's got milchik problems. That's why it appears both in Chulin and Pesachim, and it causes your high blood pressure also. It's got high salt. So those are the three things about this kuscha babli. So Gemara says, if somebody asks you a shal about a beitz and a kusach, can you eat the beitz together with the kusach? So that's a very, very serious shayla. You have to ask your rabbi about the kusach. A few beis of a kusach. So Taisa says, what's the shayla exactly? He says, if someone's coming to ask you whether you can have eggs together with milk, that's the shayla. That's not a shayla, says Taisa. It's honest. He says, yes, my daughter, she's a preschool, she can answer that. She knows that the egg is powerful. So what kind of shayla is that? Asking whether an egg is fleshix, an egg is powerful, so what's the shayla? So Taisa says, you have to ask your rough that. Every time someone calls and asks you a ridiculous question, someone calls and asks you what time lech benching is. I can't answer, I have to ask my rabbi. Well, the calendar, it says, 4:18 is lech benching, it's lech benching. So that's not a shayla, Taisa says. What does the Gemara mean when it says, afilu be'ez of a kuscha, you have to ask a shayla, you have to ask a rabbi? So Taisa says, no, it means like this. There's a whole sugya in the beginning of Masechet Beitza that if you have an egg, you shechted a hen, and then you open up the open up the head, and now the head is connected. It's not connected. We're beginning, not we're beginning. Is it nigma, not nigma? Is it power? Is it flame? Oh, complicated shayla. So that kind of shayla, somebody asks, you have to ask your rabbi. So that's what the other rishonim say. So why does the Gemara single that out? The Gemara says you have to ask your rabbi every shayla, even the easy ones, even the best of the kuskos. That's so easy. Probably nobody can answer that shayla. It's a complicated shayla, myself included. I wouldn't know. If I saw beis chab b'kuscha, I know what it was. So the metzias. That's why I don't answer the shaylas. In all my years, somebody asked me one time about a straight for shayla. I was standing at Kaparas, and somebody came up with a chicken and told me that the chicken, the bone is out of place, and something. Wanted to know what to do. I have no idea. I said, your guess is as good as mine. I never learned trade. I never saw a chicken inside. I don't know. I know what a chicken looks like on my plate. I don't know what a chicken looks like. Okay? So different generations have different people, get different expertise and different shaylas. If 100 years ago in Europe, if I would have answered that, they would have fired me for being a rock, because how can you be a rock without knowing a shayla and how to pass it on a chicken? But they didn't have to answer DNR shaylas. Okay. Getting back to the story. So Tosa says that it can't mean such a simple, elementary, such a basic question about eggs and milk. It can't be. It must be something a little bit of lumpiness to it. Somebody came to ask Mishayla the other day. They started asking Mishayla about. They said they were making eggs in a little frying pan, and now they want to know what's the status of the eggs. So they eat the eggs with milk or something like. Some very, very easy basis. So I was chuckling to myself, this basis of a kuscha. And then the person forgot the information. No, my wife wanted to know, could we eat these eggs now with flesh? That was the shayla. It was a little more complicated. He thought the shayla was, could we eat it with milk eggs? The shayla was eating with flesh. A small technical detail of the shayla. So a basis of, I would say, it's like a doctor. Very, very often, a patient goes to the doctor. The patient gives the whole story and everything. And he forgets the most important piece of information. So a good doctor, part of, I don't know, medical school, the doctors. So part of in your medical school, teach you how to take a patient's history. So you have to know how to ask the right questions, because you have to get the information, because you have to assume the person's not giving you all the information. So you have to assume that there's more there than meets the eye. So the same is true when it comes to Rabbanim. If someone's a person will come and ask a shayla, they'll present information, they leave out the most important basic information. If somebody wants to ask a shayla, an old complicated shayla, which was tevila, like what the Bibiyah Yom, a story, and they were telling me the whole story, and listen, I said, no. Can't be maker. Then they tell me afterwards, as they were leaving, they said, oh, by the way, the person who has the shayla is on chemotherapy. Does that change the psa? So the post-ex changes the psa. So it's a tremendous shasachach. We have to find a cooler. So it's a hard for to go at night, whatever, she doesn't feel well. So it's a whole different ballgame. I said, that's not an insignificant piece of information. That's a major ikachas in our sefer. So you have to be very, very careful of that. Make sure you get all the information. Anyway, so it comes Tyson and develops as your server. It's a very, very easy shayla, then you can put in, and you can wing it yourself. So what exactly is considered to be an easy shayla? So the post can point out, there are two yourselves in Shulchan Aruch. So what's considered to be an easy answer? So what's an easy shayla? So one gears in Shulchan Aruch is that anything I'm a first for psukim, anything that's mamish apostle, if somebody calls and says, Rabbi, am I allowed to eat bread on Pesach? Wait, let me check with my rabbi. You don't have to check with your rabbi. Somebody calls and says, Rabbi, am I allowed to light a fire on Shabbos? You don't have to check with your rabbi. So Torah Pshutim, from a Rosh and a Torah, that you don't have to ask. The other poskim say that the Yiras is not done on Fush for Psukim, it's done on Fush for poskim. It depends where you put the vav. So it doesn't have to be Mamash and Poskim Chumash, but something which is never Poshut. It's a double Poshut to anyone who will. Not Mishnah Bura. It's not a Machloikis. It's not a Shabbos. Mishnah Bura says, everyone does it this way. So that's called a double of Fush for poskim. So then maybe that's also not subject to this rule of asking your rabbi. So again, there are certain gradations. As to what's considered to be something so straightforward that wouldn't even be subject to this discussion. So good, so we have a qualified person ready to paskin. He's got he learned the sugyas, he knows the metzias, he's got his rabbi signed off for him, he gave him smicha, and zappi, he's not paskin if they rap or whatever, he's not allowed to paskin, all ready to roll. Is there anything that can go wrong? In terms of things that he should be aware of that could potentially throw off his psach to give an incorrect psach?
I'm sorry, the previous question about what's called a psach? Is it the same Hagdara for when you ask one child, you ask one rabbi, and then I ask another rabbi afterwards? Is it the same Hagdara of what's called Psaq?
I mean, if you ask someone, if you ask him what's Mefurish, Poskim, so then what are you going to get another opinion? If it's all Mefurish, not
Mefurish. People are Shabura, but really Rosh argues.
So that's not double Mefurish, Poskim. No Mefurish, Poskim means everyone says the same thing. It's coming out. So can anything go wrong in a Psaq? So we know in the realm of Dinim Amadeh, there's a very real consideration called Shochad, that if a person has some incentive to pass in a certain way, he took a bribe. Okay, he took a bribe. Of course, do we have the concept, a similar concept of Shochad in the realm of place of a hetter or similar types of things that could potentially throw a person off, person has a certain netiyah, person has a certain incentive to pass it incorrectly. So the Rishayim discuss the Shaila, whether a person is permitted to paskin on his own Shaila. So we have to be concerned that a person has an atiyah that he's going to, you know, he'd like it to be said, he'd like it to be mutter, he's going to paskin that it's mutter even though it's not really true. Does a person have to be concerned with that? So a lot of this discussion revolves around the sugya that appears in the end of the Sefer Baruch Maseches Nida. The Gemara speaks about the sugyas of Maris Adam, there's a whole sugya in the Mishnah, the Gemara, about different colors, what's considered to be a problematic color nuchos nida, what's considered to be a permissible color nuchos nida. So basically the din is that min haTorah, there are certain shades of red that are problematic. Anything that's not red is called not a problem. But anything even within the red family, so then the Mishnah says not every red is a problem. The Gemara tries to give you what exactly, we have Allah Moshe Messina, is this the degree, what's considered to be red, what's not considered to be red, we have Ishvipiyash and Moshe Rabbeinu, how to be dan, the halakas of Kipol, Mishnah ben dam l'dam, what's called dam l'tzmut, what's called dam l'tzmut. So the Gemara says in the end of the Sefer Baruch Hamida that some of the Amoraim already had trouble discerning with the different colors of red. The Gaonim quote this Gemara and say, no, our minhag is b'zman hazeh, we don't distinguish within reds anymore. Our minhag is whatever's red, whatever looks to us to be red, we say it's also finished. We don't say, well, it's red, but it's a shade of red that's mutter. We pass that all reds are problematic b'zman hazeh, but not everything is red. Some colors are not red. Yellow maybe it's not red, and brown maybe not red, and different shades, different other kinds of which are maybe not red. So b'zman hazeh, when we look at Maris Dam, we're not looking for within degrees of red, we're looking, is it red altogether? So we do look at Maris b'zman hazeh. We don't look at the Maris the way they used to in the days of the Tanoim. Then they used to be mamish so bedakti. Even within red, sometimes it would be mega. We don't go that far, but we still do look at Maris very often today to distinguish within what is in the red family, what's not in the red family. So the Gemara tells a strange story. The Gemara tells about the wife of Rav Nachman. Her name was Yalta. The Gemara is in the end of the fourth period of Kedusha. Some other fascinating stories about her. She was the daughter of the Rish Galus. There's a lot of interesting, you know, exciting things going on in those days. And days also. So comes Yalta, and she got a certain shayla nuchas nida, and she has a certain rav, and she didn't like the psak that she got, and she went to go ask another rav. The Gemara has a discussion about, are you allowed to do that? What are the parameters? So shopping around for psakim. So Taisus asks the kasha in that Gemara, is that why did she have to go? Why did she have to go ask somebody else? What's wrong with her husband? You know, somebody else, Nachman, you know, a little bit. So why didn't she ask her Nachman? So Taisus gives a few different answers. One answer Taisus says that maybe Rav Nachman wasn't a baki in Maris Dam. So Taisus says there were a lot of Amoraim who weren't. The Amoraim themselves say that there were some Amoraim themselves say that they didn't consider themselves to be qualified to look at Maris Dam. So maybe Rav Nachman was like that. And he didn't feel he was qualified. He was gevalig and didn't. He knew he was proficient in all the areas of Allah. So in this particular area, it wasn't his expertise. So maybe that's why she didn't go to her husband. Then Tosfos quotes another answer, which is also an interesting answer. Tosfos says that maybe she was afraid that he would be too machmir because it was his own shayla, so leave a note though. He would be too nervous to pass on the shayla, he would be machra necessarily. So she brought the shayla to a different room. But I'm Tosfos guessing different reasons why she didn't want to necessarily bring the shayla to her husband. So the Rash and his parish of Mishnayas, so gives a different answer. The Rash says that maybe the reason why she didn't ask her husband is because he's not supposed to pass on his own shayla, because he's an ogevet of her. That we're afraid that a person may unintentionally, the Khalil would say, or Nachman's going to mamish b'mishakar on purpose, they pass in a chorus shayla on purpose wrong, but maybe it's kia shaykh and yavin echam, he's going to have a little bit of a negiyah b'davar, and therefore he shouldn't pass in his own shayla. That's what the Rash writes, the possible answer to Tosfos' dilemma. So the Rash says, is that true? We don't answer shaylas for ourselves. The guy has a yal v'yavo shaylas. He has to go with somebody else. If I know the answer, I can't answer. I can't pass my own shaylas. So the Rash develops a yisai. He says maybe there's a difference between whether there's a cheskes isra or not. Those who remember from Masechet Gittin from last year, when you have a cheskes isra with something that's awesome to start with, so in order to be motzi something with a cheskes, you need a higher level of nemanos than to somebody who doesn't have a cheskes isra. So the Rash develops a chiddush that maybe she was already a nida. That was a question of to be motzi or be cheskes. So maybe that somehow a husband wouldn't be acceptable. But if it's not a shayla, the shayla's not a cheskes isra, then maybe it would be okay. So if I have a shayla of a Shabbos, there's no cheskes isra, he makes mutter. It's also. But if shayla was neither, the woman is already a surah, and I wanted to become a teres, so then I have to change the cheskes isra, so maybe that's a problem. That's what the Rash suggests. So if that Rash is correct, that would be a big chumra for us. That means, let's say I have a shayla of a tevila of a mikvah. So that's a shayla of a cheskes isra. So the husband can't pass it, his own chetzita shayla for his wife. If he knows the answer to the question, he's got to go call another Rav. So according to the Rash, that would be the din. So we don't really follow the Rash most closely. I don't think most Rabbanim today don't follow that. We follow the other Yetzirah. We assume that a person's not going to lie. A person's not going to have a negiyah b'davar, that he's going to answer the question. If he knows if he's qualified, knows the answer, so he should answer the question. If he's not qualified, then he shouldn't answer the question. So we're not so concerned about Paschal and Rosh Hashanah Bizman Hazeh. Is there anything else that could sometimes go wrong? They could sometimes mislead a person in the area of Pesach Halacha. It's a famous din. How are they going to Paschal and Parashah Shemini? That Lahoros B'yamatam B'yamatar, that Shos Yayin is not supposed to Paschal and Shailas. Just as someone who just drank is not supposed to work in the Beis HaMikdash, so too someone who just drank is not supposed to be Mayur HaLachas. That the Gemara says that that's Mamash HaDin Min HaTorah. Lahoros is B'nei So B'yamatam B'yamatar. So a person has to be careful if they drank a little bit, but they shouldn't Paschal and Shailas. For this reason, that the Gemara says that somebody on Amoraim wouldn't answer Shailas and Yontif, when Yontif, the mitzvah is Yontif. So the Gemara says in Simcha Alev Yayin, the Gemara says in Masechas Pesachim, the Rambam writes in Simcha Alev Bosa Yayin, that's not what it says in the Gemara. So the Shulchan Aruch left out that word Bosa. The Shulchan Aruch says, Ein Simcha Alev Yayin, like it says in the Gemara. And the Magen Avraham says, they should put in the word Bosa, like the Rambam says. That's a pilpul. Nafkamin Ladin for Shavuos. Nafkamin, we have to have flesh, exempt Shavuos or not. Those who follow the Rambam, Babi, have to have flesh. The Rambam says, Ein Simcha Alev Bosa Yayin. And that's what the Magen Avraham posits, that's the Mishnah Berurah quotes, and those who follow the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention the Bosa. Remember, I told the story before the Shia, a while ago I was in California for Yom Tov, and I was talking to some rabbi in California, and he said, he shows me this kolkere in a newspaper or something. It was a terrible kolkere. What was the kolkere about? I don't know who anyone necessarily signed the kolkere, but it was one of these azakha chamuras, saying that's a terrible, terrible thing. The people are not being mechaved the cholamoid properly, and people are eating pizza on cholamoid. So it would have been a cholamoid Pesach, that would have been a tachlis kolkere. So they're eating the hamish, the shakal pizza. They're going to the pizza stores on cholamoid, and they didn't say they're not eating the sukkah. They're going to the pizza stores. What's the big zilz of yotif? What's the big vaza samoyados? What was the big problem? They're not fulfilling the mitzvah of yotif properly. Kakosov befeirish b'shulchan aruch chukos yotif. And simple elbow boss of the yagin. That's what said the kokeri. So I showed the person, showed me, I said, whoever wrote the kokeri, there's not arts. I said, if you wanted to write a kosum beferish for Rambam, and simple elbow boss of the yagin, that would have been okay. But to say a kosum beferish for Shulchan Aruch, when the Shulchan Aruch and the Beis Yosef himself write the daf, you're going to leave out the word bossa because the Rambam's against the Gemara, and then to quote that from the Shulchan Aruch, stop, Mishigas, stop ridiculous. So I'm also eat bosa. We have flesh and shavuos also. I also think that bosa and shavuos, but don't blame the shavuot for that. You want to follow around, So we have, we can't. When record covers, it has to be right, not right. So then just stop. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the story. So the Gemara says that some Amoraim didn't want to answer shavuos and yotif because once they were taught to drink, so then they didn't want to be in violation of the dinner shos yayin. So the Gemara says that not only did they not want to pass in shavuos, but they wouldn't give shirim and halacha either. The Gemara says, a person drank a little bit, you're like a shia, you're like a pupul shia, so you can give a shia with Reb Chaim and Rambam and Rambam, all the pupul you want. So that's not a problem. But if you're going to give a shia in halacha, that people are going to draw conclusions from, so it depends. So sometimes I give a shia in halacha. It's a halacha topic, but to give a shia in chas ribbis. Most people aren't going to walk out of the shia and say, Rabbi Sapolsky said this, and now we're going to go enter into this big business transaction. Usually if they have a shayla, they'll come and ask, they'll ask a shayla. So that's not really a psak halacha, but sometimes it's a shir, nuchas tefillah, and I make some kind of a statement, nuchas tefillah. So when the guy daven mincha, 5 minutes ago, that's what the rabbi said, that's what I'm going to do. So in effect, I pass, whether I like it or not, I pass in the shayla. So the Gemara says that you have to be careful when you say a shir in halacha. So if the type of a shir is a type of a shir that people always draw halacha conclusions from immediately, so that would also be a violation of passing shahs when a person is drunk. But you should be careful, you shouldn't drink too much. What's considered to be drinking? So the Gemara says, even if you drink a revius of wine, so that's a big shayla. The Gemara has a din that if you drink a revius, you're not supposed to daven, you're not supposed to pasken, all these things you're not supposed to do after drinking a revius of wine. So we should discuss whether this really applies to this manazah. Our wines are very diluted, our wines are not the wines of Chazal. The Gemara describes in Pesachim that if you don't put water into your wine, so then you're not yotzei d'alakaisa, it's called yayin chai, it's not called yayin mazug. So we don't do that b'zmanazeh because they already did it for us. The Kedem already diluted the wines for us. Our wines are already very, very diluted. So maybe you can argue that our wines, that are more potent to shita nuchos tefillah, no one should draw any conclusions from this, but the halacha was the sheet of tefila that maybe our wines are not as strong as the old wines, so therefore maybe you have a little bit more than a revia. So according to the Rambam, maybe the same would be true when it comes to passing shalos. Again, you should try to be careful. If you have any shalos to pass, try to pass them before you. Try to pass them before you have anything to drink. If you're under 21, I'll drink anyway. If you're under 21, you shouldn't be passing probably anyway. So you have to wait to 40. That's what the Gemara says, Chacham Shagil Hara. The Gemara says in the end of the Sanhedrin that in order to qualify as a Zohar Mamre, so you have to be someone who's a Gil Hara. So basically he gives a psak, and some 15-year-old kid says, no, I pass him differently. So the Gemara says that that's not a Zohar Mamre, that's not an Amoret. In order to be a Zohar Mamre, you have to be a real time Chacham. You have to be someone who's a Gil Hara. So what's called the Gil Hara? So Rashi writes, like, you have to be 40 years old in order to be called the Gil Hara. So other Rishonim disagree with that. May not necessarily be true in terms of that sugya. So normally you have to wait here all the Paskin Shilas. So the Gemara already speaks about the fact that there was some Amoraim used to Paskin Shilas before they were 40. So the Gemara says, if there's no one else around, what are you going to do? The guy's hot. He's the rabbi down. So you can't wait till he's 40. He's got to make a pronouns. He's got 5 kids already. He's got to take a job at the age of 30. So he has to pass the Shabbos. Like, listen, it's not written in stone, you know, on the Paschal until you're 40. But you should be careful. You should try to wait a little bit older before you start passing Shabbos. The most important thing the person should be aware of when they're passing Shabbos is that they have to realize that their mom is giving it to Hashem, to the world. It means they're following mom in the footsteps of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Moshe Rabbeinu. That was his name. That was his title. He was the Rabbi of Yisrael. He was the one Paskin. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu did all day. The Yamanu Amal Moshe Rabbeinu Bokeh Arav. They brought him the Mamanis. They brought him the Nias of the Heter. And they all kind of shilas. That's what he was doing. Mom Hashem Balayla. So when a person passes the shilas, so he's following the footsteps of Moshe Rabbeinu. So a person has to take that with the utmost seriousness. He has to be loyal to that Messiah of Moshe Rabbeinu. We say that when you're passing a shadow, realize that. Realize who's looking down at you. Kiveg is looking at you. He's cheering you on. The Chofetz Chaim is cheering you on. All the Paiske Halach, the very Darius of 3,500 years, are all thanking you to pass the shadows properly. So you have to pass with the utmost Yerushalayim. That's what Moshe Feinstein writes in his Hagadamah to Yerush Moshe. He writes that a Rav, you know, it's very, very hard. It's very difficult for a Rav to pass the shadows. How does he know that he's passing it properly? So Moshe writes that the definition of a correct psak doesn't mean that it's correct in Shemayim. The Beis and Shemayim, although in Shemayim, whatever they pass in Shemayim, that's not my issue. That's not my concern with the passing in Shemayim. I have to make sure that I pass in the Shemayim properly in this world. So what does it mean to pass it properly in this world? So Moshe says there are two conditions. So you have to learn to do sugyas really, really, really well and give it your best, and you have to have proper your Shemayim. So you have some people who have a lot of your Shemayim, but they don't necessarily know the sugyas so well, so that's not so good. That's great for your Shemayim, but it's not so good for passing in Shailas. Then you have other people who know how to do a lot of research, they know how to do a lot of reading, they know how to look a lot of things up online, but that's a good way to pass in Shailas or not. I think everyone can figure out what I think about that, but probably not the best way. But they do a lot of research, but they don't have your Shemayim. They lack of the big, they don't understand, they don't realize the significance of what they're doing. Everything's a joke, everything's a big, big joke. The whole Torah, the whole Allah, everything's a game. So of course you're not going to pass in properly. So Moshe says a person does the proper establishment in terms of learning to the sugya, and he has the proper Yerushalayim, that's all he has to ask himself. And then, Eimad Dayan and Masha in the prayers. So then he has to pass him whatever the psach that he gives, that's the correct psach. And when he comes to Achamev Yasim Shon and the Yeshiva Shamal, the Paskin for care, what's that doing? What does Shemayim mean? That's not, it doesn't concern me, says the Moshe. So the Moshe develops this beautiful Yisrael based on the Gemara, the night of Parak Shabbos. But the Gemara says it was Rechokish Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva, about whether you're allowed to do Machshir and Mila on Shabbos. You have the bris is like a Shabbos in the eighth day. You're allowed to make a knife. You're allowed to carry a knife. You're allowed to drive. You're allowed to do all those things to enable you to do the bris. So Rabbi Akiva said that's Chol Shabbos Deraisa. Rabbi Eliezer says it's Mutzvah Chachiva. It's a mitzvah to do it. So we pass the law like Rabbi Akiva. If a person today would follow Rabbi Eliezer, Shita, we call him Chol Shabbos for his. So we don't pass him. Imagine if we would have passed like Rabbi Eliezer, the Mutzvah could drive to the bris. He doesn't have to come for Shabbos. He could fly. He's got to do a bris in Nebraska. He'll fly on Saturday morning. He'll go fly to do the bris. That's called Triple Azad. It's had the Gomer called Triple Azad. But we don't pass it like that. We pass that's called Shabbos Gomer. So the Gemara tells a story that in the town of Rabbi Eliezer, there was once a decree that the Romans had a whole area that they decreed against Bris Milah. And Rabbi Eliezer's town somehow was spared from that decree. So the Gemara says, why? Because in Rabbi Eliezer's town, they had such chavivas, mitzvah milah, they used to be Michal Shabbos, they would make the knives on Shabbos, they would carry the knives. Whatever the Rebbe said, they would do that. Such a chavivas, mitzvah bris milah. So therefore, they were spared this decree. So Moshe writes, We paskin that it was wrong. We paskin that it was Chol Shabbos. So Moshe says, no, it wasn't paskin yet in his days. In the days of Rabbi Elazar and Meshul, it wasn't Nimnu Vagom. Then it was, it never went to the Sanhedrin yet. So in the days of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer's sheet was a valid sheet. Rabbi Elazar learned it as soon as he came to the conclusion that it's supposed to be Chol Shabbos. So even though in Shemayim we pass like Rabbi Akiva, and I leave it the Emes now, the Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, the Kozman that it wasn't like the Paschal against Rabbi Elazar, that was a valid sheet in Halacha, and they followed what their Rebbe said, and therefore they were rewarded appropriately. So I'm sure that's the same is true for any Posek, that a Posek has to Paschal, any of that, Amash, any of Rosh, better, if he's stuck on the Umdul Minyan, let's say, someone comes up with a Psaq, and say, nobody else in the world holds that way. And then after 50 years, it becomes Mamish, Adas, Nibcham, and Halacha, Lagam, right? So you're not supposed to follow the Psaq anymore. Once it's Nibcham, and Halacha, but Kozman, that's not Nibcham, and Halacha, this Paisek is a qualified Paisek. So if he comes to a conclusion, he's allowed to follow his Pesachim, and people who are his tummy, they're allowed to follow his Pesachim also. But it has to be with the proper Yerushimayim. So yeah, a person has to have Yerushimayim when they pass him, but they shouldn't be terrified. Sometimes the person is so terrified of answering a question, they can't assume that he's qualified to do so, so then he's not going to pass it. He's going to be so scared to pass it. He's not going to pass it. Who's going to pass it instead? So once a cipher told me that, one of his friends or something, another cipher, went to one of the Ger Rebbe's and said to him that, you know, even though he trained for many years to be a cipher, and he feels he's qualified to be himself, he's too scared. He missed one line, one could show you the whole thing, the whole film. He's possibly said, yeah, he's too scared to be a cipher. So the rabbi turned around and said, so who should be the cipher? The person is not scared. So he said, of course you have to have that fear, of course you have to have that awe, but you can't have that fear to cripple you. They can't paralyze you. You have to be able to do it. No, the surgeon, of course, when the surgeon goes in there, of course he realizes the stakes are high, but if he can't stop his hand from shaking, so he shouldn't do it. But he has to be able to overcome as best as he can, if his personality is such, but to overcome that fear, to be able to pass him properly. So we want to train Rabbanim who are proficient in Halacha, we want to train Rabbanim who are proficient in Metzias, we want to train Rabbanim who know how to express themselves properly, we want Rabbanim who know how to research a Shaila properly, in the proper venue, the proper avenue, how to learn to a Sugi properly. Svarim, whatever Svarim means, as not as that, but to learn to a Sugi in the proper manner, and the most important ingredient is Yerushalayim. If you have the proper element of Yerushalayim and everything else, so then hopefully there's Rav will bless you with the prophets. You have the Shemaiah, and you didn't drink anything, and you're not a gift, but all those other things. Hopefully we'll be a super Shemaiah to the deal.